we identified that we were losing a lot of freshmen, and they would become truant, they would fail a lot of courses.
Bartlett High in Anchorage finds a formula for cutting its dropout rate in half. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, October 30th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, crowdsourcing for a satirical news show on the Alaska legislature.
It's like the court jester who can say anything to the king and kind of get away with it. And so humor is a way to offer commentary on issues in kind of a safe environment.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Crowley. Celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. And by Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news on Alaska's business sector, government, and industry since 1985. Information and subscriptions online at akbizmag.com.
The Federal Communications Commission has approved GCI's purchase of Anchorage television station KTVA. The approval was made public today. GCI Vice President David Morris says the FCC found the purchase to be in the public's interest.
We've waited for this order for about 11 months. We've invested approximately $20 million into a state-of-the-art facility, and we will start preparing for our first newscast. It's yet to be determined when that is.
The approval provides for the transfer of multiple television licenses, two of which will be used for GCI subsidiaries.
We're in the process of purchasing a full-power station, which is KTVA in Anchorage, and then two low-power stations, one located in Juneau and one located in Sitka. And so they have different licenses, and that's what the FCC approved in this order. We still need to go through the financial closing of the entities, but we expect that to occur over the next several days.
The federal commissioners denied objections to the sale filed by Alaska Broadcasters, Fireweed Communications, and Northern Lights Media. Alaska Broadcasters had alleged that GCI lacks journalistic integrity and would distort the news. However, the FCC decision notes that the allegations regarding journalistic independence are speculative and based on hearsay. A Delta flight traveling from Tokyo to San Francisco made an emergency stop in the remote community of Cold Bay today. KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal reports.
Delta's Boeing 767 jet experienced engine problems early in the morning. A Delta spokesman wouldn't say exactly what went wrong, but a spokesman from the National Transportation Safety Board told KTUU that pilots saw a warning on their electronic engine controls. Cold Bay's airport is a designated diversion spot for trans-Pacific flights, so the pilots decided to land there. Catherine Bland works at the Eisenbeck National Wildlife Refuge in Cold Bay. She says she heard a loud jet engine around 6 a.m., followed by a flurry of activity on the runway.
I thought, oh, what's going on out there? And I looked and I see the Delta plane sitting on the tarmac. And then when I came into work, I started getting a request for help.
Deputy Refuge Manager Leticia Melendez says Eisenbeck staff and the village tried to put Delta's 178 passengers and crew at ease.
I say our role is to do as much as we can to minimize the discomfort and to try and help with security and try kind of take the edge off of what could have potentially been a big disaster.
The travelers spent 6 hours on the plane before Delta let them off to stretch. The airport's only a 5 or 10 minute walk from the refuge, but they weren't allowed to stray that far.
Let me tell you, the little kid in me got excited and thought, oh, they get to see the refuge. But, you know, that's just a little reaction because I get excited about these things just as much as anybody who has a passion for exposing, you know, the wonders of nature.
Instead, passengers spent time at Cold Bay's community center and gym. Delta finally sent a replacement jet to get them from Cold Bay on Wednesday afternoon with a Transportation Security Administration team and customs staff on board to screen the passengers. The flight left Cold Bay around 3 p.m. Alaska time, but some Delta employees were expected to stick around a little longer. Mary Martin owns and operates the Cold Bay Lodge, a small hotel. She says Delta reserved rooms for the maintenance and cockpit crews who are fixing the disabled jet. Martin says there's not much to see in the town of Cold Bay, just a few houses and a school, but the airstrip provides the most intrigue.
We have an interesting airport, and we go from 60 to quadruple our population in a minute's notice, depending on the aircraft and what's on board.
Exactly what happened on board is still under investigation. The NTSB will be looking into the engine issue along with Delta Airlines. In on Alaska, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
The Anchorage School District has long been struggling to get more students to graduate from high school with only slight improvement. Last year, the rate of students graduating jumped 3.5% for ASD. Bartlett High School is leading the way. KSKA's Daisha Eaton visited the school to find out how they're doing it.
Brian Jones was typical of many students at Bartlett in that he'd switched schools a lot and fallen behind. The lanky 19-year-old with black-rimmed glasses started out at Service, then moved to Fairbanks and ended up back in Anchorage at Bartlett for 12th grade. By then, he needed to do all his senior year classes, plus make up 1.5 credits.
I was behind in English, history, and I hadn't taken a gym class yet.
Jones says he was able to graduate because of an online credit recovery program called APEX, which was available to him on demand. He used the program to make up classes, fitting in online work in between his regular classes.
It was very helpful because it was like a second chance to, like, you know, make up for mistakes of my freshman and sophomore year.
Bartlett High has struggled with a high dropout rate. In 2011, the percentage of students graduating from Bartlett was about 68%. The percentage dropping out, basically just disappearing from school, hit nearly 10%. The other 22% of students either left the district or were staying in high school longer than 4 years to graduate.
We had our graduation coaches go out into the community, find our dropout kids, and then literally bring them back to school.
That's Bartlett Principal Dan Gallego. He also made two other big changes. One was expanding the APEX online credit recovery program that Jones used, making it available to students all day so that students like him, who had fallen behind, could more easily catch up. They also provided more structure for freshmen, so hopefully they wouldn't find themselves falling behind in the first place.
We decided to develop a ninth grade academy so we can transition those middle school kids into high school life.
Gallego says studies show ninth grade truancy is linked to dropping out.
We identified that we were losing a lot of freshmen, and they would become truant, they would fail a lot of courses.
The school now separates ninth graders from upperclassmen, and they're not allowed to leave campus during school hours. Last spring, the first class that went all the way through high school, beginning with the freshman academy, graduated. The school's dropout rate fell by more than half, to 4%. And the graduation rate jumped. Ed Graff, superintendent of the Anchorage School District, says the improvements at Bartlett are notable.
So what I think we have there is we have really created a culture or a system of support for students. And that's, I think, where I would attribute a lot of the success to their graduation increases.
But Graff says lots of other things are also contributing to the school's success. They've implemented targeted instruction, teaching to each student at their learning level, spearheaded a social and emotional learning initiative, and provided experiential learning opportunities for students, among other things. He doesn't want to take a cookie-cutter approach, but Graff says they are watching Bartlett closely.
It's a positive thing, and we are looking at why they're doing so well there and trying to find those targeted practices that are occurring.
Principal Gallego says he hopes graduation rates at Bartlett continue to climb, but he's worried that'll be difficult without two graduation coaches who were let go during the last round of budget cuts. Graduate Brian Jones says walking across the stage on graduation day last spring is a feeling he won't forget.
It's hard to explain. It's just, you know, when they call your name up, and you grab your diploma and, you know, you're walking across the stage and you shake Mr. Gallego's hand and, you know, all the teachers and stuff like that. It just feels pretty amazing, you know, that you finally, 4 years down the road, you finally did it.
Jones has a retail job at the Diamond Mall. He's saving for college and plans to enroll at University of Alaska Anchorage to study journalism. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The Alaska National Guard is responding to allegations of sexual assault within its ranks. Brigadier General Mike Bridges, the commander of the Alaska National Guard, says there have been more than 24 alleged cases of sexual assault since 2009.
There have been 29 cases of alleged sexual assault reported to the Alaska National Guard. and that's with Army and or Air, National Guard. The majority of those were alleged by civilian perpetrators on Guard members, whether they were in the Guard then or since then.
This week, the Anchorage Daily News reported there is an investigation into soldiers, including some in the Alaska Army Guard's Recruiting and Retention Unit, headquartered at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. Bridges says the Alaska Air National Guard has a new sexual assault investigator as part of a military-wide effort to get a handle on the problem.
Across the Department of Defense, the recent expanded amount of reports that were coming in across the whole Department of Defense indicated a need, and Department of Defense has now provided that, and we've received ours within this last year, back in the springtime.
A statement released from the Alaska National Guard offices Tuesday said local law enforcement have been contacted in 21 cases. Bridges says he can't disclose how many of the cases are under investigation. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, creative problem solving with an outer space mission in EEC.
Hopefully put them in the mindset of being change makers. How can I see a problem and then actually come up with a solution and implement that solution?
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Enroll Alaska, helping educate and enroll Alaskans in health insurance under the federal mandate created by the Affordable Care Act. Learn more at enrollingalaska.com. And by ERA. For more than 40 years, ERA Alaska's planes have carried the stories of Alaska. ERA Alaska, bringing Alaskans together. More at flyera.com.
U.S. Senator Mark Begich says he still supports the Affordable Care Act, but he recently joined 9 other Senate Democrats in asking the Obama administration to extend the sign-up period. Begich says it's only fair because the government's online insurance marketplace has been plagued with technical problems.
My view is the individual shouldn't be penalized because the government can't get it together here and getting that website. So for my view is for each one of those weeks that's delayed on the front end, we should extend out the enrollment period for people to have enough time to enroll.
The administration did extend the deadline for enrolling without risk of a fine for 6 weeks until March 31st. A letter Begich signed calls for another extension. The letter, originated by Senator Jean Shaheen of New Hampshire, doesn't specify a new date. Begich says he doesn't believe it would weaken the healthcare program. An insurance industry group, though, has said another extension would add to its costs and possibly increase prices for 2015. Unseasonable weather has reignited a wildfire near Delta Junction. BLM Alaska Fire Service Manager Kent Slaughter says the Mississippi fire rekindled Monday due to 60-degree temperatures and warm, dry Chinook winds.
The high winds and warm temperatures dried out the dead grass and other fuels down there and pushed the fire across the control lines on Monday morning. We've got about 10 people on the fire. It's about 300 acres.
The new acreage is in addition to the more than 67,000 acres the Mississippi fire burned this summer. The blaze started May 30th by an unknown cause on military land. Slaughter says the newly active portion of the fire is in grass and brush on state land in an old burn area about 2.5 miles from the Whitestone Farms community north of Delta. He says the fire is not currently threatening anything and anticipates cooler, wetter weather will soon subdue the activity.
After the winds died down, we were able to get a better handle on things. So we're going to hold with the personnel we have and not increase the number of personnel staffing it. We are already starting to run into some issues with access in terms of ice on the river. So we're hopeful that as things get cooler, we'll be able to take a handle on this and then be able to unstaff it again and just put it back into monitor status.
Slaughter calls the late season wildfire very unusual. He says no other wildfire activity is active around the state, but adds the fire service is keeping an eye out given this fall's unusual weather. Residents near Kay Beach Road in Kenai and across the peninsula might finally have some relief as they continue to battle surface and groundwater flooding. Borough Mayor Mike Navarre issued a local disaster emergency declaration Tuesday. KDLL's Shaylin Cochran has more.
It seems to be one step forward, two steps back around here. Just a few days ago, things were looking a little bit on the dry side.
We're going to go look at the really ugly stuff. We'll start at, we'll probably start at Trawling and work our way back.
I'm getting a tour with the borough's road service area manager, Pat Malone. Between miles 11 and 16 along K Beach Road, it's a mess. And the 3 or so inches of rain that fell late in the weekend didn't help much.
This is coming out of that swamp back there. It's now a real creek. We have fish in it, too. Not salmon. Sticklebacks.
A day after Governor Sean Parnell took a look at the extent of the damage property owners face, the borough took the first step toward getting additional resources to help alleviate what they can by issuing the declaration. Borough spokesperson Brenda Ahlberg says first, the state needs to sign off.
If so, then what would be enacted is the individual assistance program. That program would give to the affected homeowners that qualify some funds to mitigate damages.
The declaration doesn't stop at K Beach. Tall Tree Road and Anchor Point is impassable due to flooding. The Seward Airport is closed also due to flooding, and a portion of the road between Tyonic and Beluga on the other side of the inlet has been washed out. Residents in this area have been trying to keep their homes dry for weeks. 2 years' worth of heavy snow, quick spring melts, and lots of rain has left the ground completely saturated. And to make matters worse, it's pretty much as flat as a pancake out here, so it takes a long time for all of this water to make it north and west to Cook Inlet, and that progress is slowed up each time the water runs into a roadway. Property owners have been doing what they can to help keep the water at bay, but diverting the water doesn't do anything to drain it, it just moves it someplace else. That's what was keeping Brandy Washburn from taking action when I spoke to her at a recent community meeting where neighbors were trying to understand the problem and drum up ideas to fix it.
Everyone around me and back of me and to the side of her is flooded. And, you know, I haven't gone and gotten a pump and all because if I pump my place or their place, it's an effect that keeps going, you know, and I can't do that to the other people.
The borough is keeping tabs on property damage estimates and affected structures and lots at their website. Also posted are mitigation tips like avoiding pumping septic systems and getting wells tested before freeze. Reporting in Kenai, I'm Shaylin Cochran.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority is developing the Kinnick Arm Crossing to further develop the transportation system between Anchorage and the Matsu Borough. The bridge could create construction jobs, provide access to land for commercial, industrial, and residential development, and shorten the route to Alaska's interior and North Slope. There's more information on the Kinnick Arm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
Juneau-based filmmaker and illustrator Pat Race wants to create a satirical news show documenting the 2014 Alaska legislature, and he hopes crowdsourcing will make it happen. KTOO's Lisa Fu has the story.
You may know Pat Race from this.
We want you to help us buy back the state legislature.
Pat Race, Lou Logan, and Aaron Searing are the guys behind the Alaska Robotics label. In 2007, the trio created the online short Buy Back Alaska to satirize the Veeco corruption scandal.
Based on recent ethical violations, our political scientists estimate that the cost of renting an Alaska state legislator for a session is about $250,000, although some can be had for much less.
There's the 2007 Frank Murkowski tribute. And legislative update.
Good day. This is Pat Race reporting from Juneau, Alaska, where the legislature is in session and out to lunch.
Since 2004, Alaska Robotics has occasionally produced short satirical web videos. Now they want to create a web series during the 2014 legislative session called Alaska Robotics News.
We would follow the news. We'd follow what's going on in the Capitol building. And we would offer commentary and criticism and humor and create sort of a parody news show along the lines of like Weekend Update or The Daily Show, but more localized.
Race says no one would be safe in the upcoming series.
I want to make fun of both sides of the aisle. I don't want to protect anyone and attack anyone.
Politically, Race considers himself middle of the road.
My dad is pretty conservative and my mom's pretty liberal, and I feel like I'm in the middle on a lot of issues. Though I think that George Bush probably pushed me more in the liberal direction most recently. But Obama's doing a pretty good job of pushing me back.
While he may not be able to say definitively what political box he's in, Race knows what he cares about: personal freedom, everyone having a voice, and political satire. Race says it engages people, keeps them informed, and it can be powerful.
It's like the court jester who can say anything to the king and kind of get away with it. And so it's important to have political satire because you can hold this up as a reflection. And it's a little bit of a funhouse circus mirror reflection, but it is a reflection of our society. Humor is a way to offer commentary on issues in kind of a safe environment.
Race says Alaska Robotics News is targeted to all Alaskans. There's already a fan base.
I get a lot of state workers and people that are in the Capitol building that aren't, for whatever reason, allowed to really have a political opinion or express it very well. And they really enjoy seeing our shorts because I think it gives them a chance to sort of decompress or blow off some steam or sort of laugh at the position that they're in.
Ray says it's important that politicians know how to laugh at themselves.
I thought Sarah Palin did a great job when she went on Saturday Night Live. I think that was like one of the things that really made her stand out as like a human being more than just a political candidate. And I'm not going to go down that road of what I think about Sarah Palin, but that was something that really impressed me.
During the last legislative session, Race had this legislator on his program.
Senator Bill Wilichowski. How are you tonight, Senator Wilichowski?
It's Wilichowski.
Gesundheit.
Race hopes Governor Sean Parnell will make an appearance on Alaska Robotics News this coming legislative season. If you want to see the 2014 Alaska legislature reflected in a funhouse mirror, you can find Alaska Robotics News on Kickstarter. The project is now live. The pledge levels mimic the political hierarchy. If you pledge $5 or more, you're an intern. $15 or more moves you up to page. Pledging at the $75 or $100 level makes you a representative or senator. $500 makes you a good old boy. Pledge $4,000 or more, and you're in the Corrupt Bastards Club. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
Students in EEC are working to solve problems in outer space. Citizens in a theoretical settlement need help with things like transportation, food production, and energy. And they're in luck. EEC students know a thing or two about life in remote locations. KYUK's Ben Matheson has the story.
Students in Ms. Julia's class heard a plea from interstellar space.
Hello, citizens of Earth.
The mayor of the first city on a new planet, City X, needs help.
Unfortunately, now that we are here, we realize just how unprepared we were for this great change.
So begins the City X project, a workshop to teach design skills and creative problem solving. Each student is assigned a citizen with a particular problem like medical needs, power generation, or getting enough food. From there, students empathize and brainstorm solutions. Alex is in fifth grade.
My character is American. His chip's heater went out and they're cold.
Alex has filled up a piece of paper with pictures, notes, and some rough schematics. He's leaning towards development of an item called the heat shot.
A shot that gives him heat.
He chooses that over the heat orb or a force field-based system. Third grader Kristen is trying to help Malika.
Her friend is trying to grow plants, but she has to carry water all the way from the river in buckets.
Ideas include a robot, a jetpack, a cart and water heater connected to a snow machine, and because in brainstorming, anything goes.
A flying pig.
The creative juices are flowing. This is exactly what Libby Falk, the director of the City X project, had in mind when she and the team planned the workshop.
To hopefully put them in the mindset of being change makers. How can I see a problem and then actually come up with a solution and implement that solution?
Once the students have a page full of ideas, they get their hands dirty with chunks of bright colored clay. Within about 15 minutes, fourth grader Nathan has sculpted an armored bodysuit known as Iron Clothes.
If he falls from the tree, his arm or legs or head won't break.
The idea of helping out a space colony is still far off in the future, but it's not that far. The CityX team brought with a 3D printer. It's basically a tool that can build a real physical object when it's fed the digital instructions. It's perfect for collaboration across the globe. Brett Schilke is director of IdeaCo, the nonprofit that puts on the workshops.
3D printing technology is completely changing every industry and is going to completely revolutionize so many parts of our lives. It's not even completely out of reach to think that within their lifetimes, they could actually be doing this for a real job. We could be traveling to other planets with 3D printers and trying to create things that are solving problems when we get there.
And that could happen sooner rather than later. One student project from this year's workshops will be sent up to the International Space Station and printed in space.
So that's really, really exciting for the kids, obviously.
But back to Earth and Ms. Julia's classroom. It's time to draw the inventions in three different perspectives.
So you turned it sideways so you can see the different shapes. You can keep drawing. You're doing really good.
And begin modeling with 3D design software.
Control button, and then I click and drag. See how I can look at it from all these different angles?
The students, of course, pick it up amazingly fast, and within a few minutes have rough mock-ups. The third and final day of the project involves fine-tuning the models and printing out objects. Matthew Straub is a director for the workshop.
We have the printer there in the classroom, and it's operating. It's actually printing something right before their eyes. And kids always respond to that because it's there, it's real.
But life in EEC is pretty real, too. The remoteness of the community requires a high degree of self-sufficiency. Students live in homes with no running water, and a huge part of their diet comes from their traditional subsistence foods. Their teacher, Ms. Julia Oshwald, knew the CityX team through a friend and helped bring the project to EEC. She says her students bring their unique perspectives.
That helps them think outside of the box. You know, kids in Wisconsin might not have to go out and get their water and do all that process, so they have different knowledge bases and different backgrounds, and so I think they understood the problems in a different way.
In any case, the citizens of CityX are lucky to have help from Ms. Julia's students. Life is just better in outer space if you have tools like a food unrottening shotgun and a platypus car. In EEC, I'm Ben Matheson.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer and Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Shaylin Cochran in Kenai, Lisa Fu in Juneau, and Ben Matheson in EEC. APRN's Liz Ruskin reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Parents, encourage your kids to participate in the Healthy Futures Challenge at their school. It's free and a lot of fun. All your kids need to do is be active each week and keep a log of their physical activities. They'll feel great and get cool prizes, too. Go to playeveryday.alaska.gov to find out if your child's elementary school is participating. And parents, why not get out and play every day with your kids? It's great for the whole family. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. Calling all Alaskan artists. Alaska Public Media's annual art showcase and auction is February 6th through the 8th. This unique opportunity features Alaskan artists and their work in fine arts media in a live auction televised around the state and in an online catalog. Deadline for submission is December 16th. Visit alaskapublic.org for more information. Proceeds benefit Alaska Public Media.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.